Hello and welcome to the Deep Track Podcast, an exploration of watches, trends, and culture with a few adventures along the way. I'm your host, Blake Bettner. This week, we are just returning to New York City from Watches and Wonders 2024 in Geneva. I had a blast at the show there in Geneva last week and saw a lot of really cool watches. Was able to connect with a lot of colleagues and friends that you don't get to see all that often. It's one of my favorite things about going to these shows. I think consensus around the show this year is that it was something of a slower year, slightly more conservative year. Some people were disappointed, I'm reading in some of the communities. However, I will say, I think there was a lot of really good, interesting stuff happening this year. You maybe just had to look a little bit harder to find it. I know there's a lot of watches that were released that I was particularly fond of. I'm going to talk about some of them today before we get into a special discussion towards the end. We will get back to our regularly programmed scheduling here in the coming weeks with more guests. We'll be talking a little bit more about some of the trends coming out of Watches and Wonders. And this is something that, you know, it's a show that takes some time to fully digest. You know, when you're there, you are, or even if you're not there, if you're just there, you know, experiencing all the new releases at once, it's a little difficult to differentiate some true feelings on the watches as they come out. I have found in years past that sometimes weeks later, or even months later, I'll have certain watches that I wasn't really expecting to linger in the back of my head to still be there and be watches that I was still thinking about all that time later. And those are the ones that kind of stick with you in unexpected ways. And I'm sure that that will happen this year. Today, I'm going to talk about some of the watches that stuck out to me in particular, along with some of the watches that I see that are quite popular that didn't quite resonate with me as much as everyone else. So this one will be a little bit more personal in my own thoughts of the show. And as I mentioned, we will cut into a discussion that I had with Professor Brian Cox at the show at the IWC booth. He was a guest of IWC around the release of their Eternal Calendar, which is a watch that I do have written up on the site, along with some hands-on thoughts of some of their other perpetual calendars. The Eternal Calendar is quite interesting for a few reasons, and I'll start to get into this and a few of the other watches that have really stuck out to me. But first, let's do a wrist check. I am wearing a Formex Essence Legera in a carbon case, ultra lightweight watch with a cool gray dial. I saw some of the people from Formex in Geneva, so I wanted to get this watch out and give it a wear upon getting back. This is a watch that I still think is particularly interesting and represents a really great value and a lot of creativity expressed here from Formex, and really a refinement on some concepts that they've been running with for a while. How the case suspension is integrated into this very small, kind of lightweight case, I think is still really interesting. This is just the kind of thing that you don't really see a whole ton of in from the mainstream brands, I suppose. So, anyways, if you're not familiar with Formex, definitely go check them out. I'll leave a link to them down below. All right, let's get back to the IWC Perpetual Calendars and Eternal Calendar. So the Eternal Calendar is, it's a secular calendar, really. So it takes into account the non-leap years that we should be having. If you're unfamiliar, a year is defined by 365 days, but it's not actually 365 days on the dot, and a 24-hour day is not actually 24 hours on the dot. So in reality, a year is 365 days, 5 hours, 48 minutes, and 56 seconds. And a day is, just under 24 hours, 23 hours, 56 minutes and 4 seconds, approximately. So that's the reason that we have leap years in the first place, which is to account for the inconsistencies there between how we, keep time in a practical manner in our day-to-day lives through the month and through the year. So the leap year adds that extra day at the end of February, obviously, to account for time lost there. So every so often, if a year is divisible by 100 and not divisible by 400, the leap year is skipped. So a secular calendar accounts for those skipped leap years. And the Eternal Calendar here is just such a watch. And how they've gone about doing this, I think is pretty interesting. They aren't the first people to do this, of course. There's plenty of them that exist out there, even though it's relatively uncommon, of course. The most recent one that sticks, the most recent one that comes to mind is the only watch built by Furlan Mari this year, which will be coming up to auction in May. I had a chance to see this watch again at the show. It reminded me how much I really love it. At any rate, IWC made theirs with the caliber 52640. It has 396 parts, and it uses a secular calendar module that is actually kind of visible partially through an aperture in the dial at around 4:30. So that secular calendar module is set within the 48-month cam with a Maltese cross gear, reducing gear. So that takes that 48-month cam, which makes a revolution every 4 years, programming. The calendar, indicating the leap year, and it reduces it to making a full rotation every 400 years, and that allows this calendar to skip three leap years over the same 400-year period of time. So, technically not eternal. In fact, the years, I think the number disc in there only goes up to, 2299, I believe, would be the highest that it would go. Well beyond the bounds of any concerns of a human lifetime. So I think it's a cool thing that they've made. And even further still, they've got a reduction gear in the moon phase that allows it to be accurate for 45 million years. So there's a lot technically going on with this watch that is pretty cool. It's priced a little over $150,000. Which frankly feels like kind of a lot, I suppose, for this. As I mentioned, there are other brands that do this, and I fully expect a production version of the Edonly watch from Furlan Mari, which I'm guessing will be well under, I don't know, maybe 15 grand, 10 grand, even, or something in that realm. Don't quote me on that. I don't know for sure. It'll be really curious to see what this watch sells for at Only Watch next month. Furlan Mari, of course, worked with Dominique Renaud, Renaud Poppy, and Julien Cher. Some pretty cool stuff going on there. And I'll have some more details on that watch from Furlan Mari coming out of the site soon. I talked to Andrea in Geneva last week, and hope to get him on the podcast sometime soon as well. He's got a lot of really cool things cooking, by the way. Yeah, this is one of the brands that I'm maybe most excited about in terms of the small independent scene there. So keep an eye out for that. One other quick thing about these IWC perpetual calendars is the new dial structure and design, which kind of pushes straight out and up into the domed crystal. So the dial has kind of a slope down at the perimeter, and there's a chapter ring that kind of partially falls on the other side of that chapter ring on the downward slope. This is very similar to what we've seen from Tag Heuer in that glass box Carrera 39. I think it's a really cool design. IWC, it doesn't look exactly like that. It's just kind of like a slightly similar, I suppose, design. I think it works really well here in these IWC watches in the Portuguese collection. In the Portuguese collection, in both the Eternal Calendar and the Perpetual Calendars that they released. It's a really handsome dial. I like how the information is presented. I like how IWC presents the information of their Perpetual Calendars. And I like that it's mechanically all structured so that it's adjustable through the crown. So you don't have to kind of futz with any of the pushers on the side of the case or anything like that. One of the reasons that I certainly appreciate these watches from IWC. Personally, I like the Dune dial colorway, and I think I would be able to make do with just a regular perpetual calendar, truth being told. So that's probably the route that I would go there. The Dune color, though, I found probably the most interesting thing at the IWC booth this year, at least that I can talk about at the moment. So the Dune color is kind of sandy or champagne colored, but honestly it looks very different depending on the light and depending on the angle, which is of course a theme that we've talked a lot about with some new interesting dials that are out there made with ornate textures or structures or how color is implemented. This is certainly a trend that we've seen take hold over the last 5 years, thanks to the likes of Grand Seiko, who have certainly pushed the art form forward. And we're getting it kind of all the way up and down the scale here. Last year I made a similar comment about the Ingenieur that was released with the Aqua dial, and because of the structure, the texture of that dial, the blue can really take on a lot of different hues depending on the angle and lighting. It's a lot softer here in the Dune colorway of the Portuguese, and it's just something that's really interesting. It really kind of pulls you in for a closer look. Personally, I would have been really curious to see this execution done with black hands and numerals. I think that would have looked pretty cool. Maybe even, I don't know, sporty. I think that would look pretty cool. As they have it, it's gold applied indices and gold leaf hands. I will say, as far as perpetual calendars from IWC goes, especially on the formal end, I'm probably taking something like the Portofino perpetual calendar, as they make that in steel, which can be had for about $25,000, which I think is a lot of watch, and I love how the information is presented in that. I know that IWC in the moon phases, it's kind of a thing with the dual hemisphere moon phase display, but frankly, if I'm going this route and it's going to be formal, I'd probably keep that off the dial and again go with something like the Portofino perpetual calendar there. Again, I've got a lot more of this, my thoughts here on this watch, along with the video of these watches hands-on, over now live over on the Deep Track, so I'll leave a link to that down below. And just a quick, I guess, slight clarification here: the regular perpetual calendar Portuguese watches, the dial is not; it doesn't have as dramatic a slope at the perimeter as the eternal calendar, which has kind of a unique structure around it. All right, another watch that I wanted to talk about, speaking of Tag Heuer, is a new colorway in the Glass Box Carrera collection, which is kind of a true panda colorway with a silver dial and black subdials and some red accents. It's a great colorway. I still like this watch a great deal. I still say that it represents pretty good value for what you're getting. I'll be getting my hands on this watch and maybe doing a more of an in-depth review on that one coming soon. Another watch that I saw that I was really impressed by in terms of thin watches, as far as thin watches goes, is the Piaget Altiplano Concept Tourbillon, which is the world's thinnest tourbillon. It's 2 millimeters in thickness in total. Of course, thin watches are, nothing new for Piaget. It's something that they've been doing and are quite good at. This watch appeared this year alongside a new record-breaking watch from Bulgari. But this is the thinnest watch with a tourbillon in it, and they've patented the kind of cage that surrounds the tourbillon that integrates it to the rest of the case. So it's a really interesting watch to see, and it almost kind of defies, regular logic just looking at it, just because of how flat everything looks. And a tourbillon, I think, is something that we're used to looking into, and that's a component of a watch, a complication of a watch, that generally adds some depth into it as you are kind of looking over the balance wheel and seeing the escape wheel kind of click away and move the whole carriage around. There's usually some depth there, so seeing it reduced to like a single dimension almost is a jarring thing. It almost looks like you're looking at a screen from an angle. And the watch overall, I think, is just a really beautiful design. I'm a big fan of Piaget's designs, and I think the aesthetic here really works well. I think the Altiplano is, in general, a really gorgeous watch. So this is a watch that has kind of stuck with me since I was able to see it on the final day there. I do have some video of this watch and some other Piaget watches. They also had the Apollo 79 that we saw released earlier in the year there, so that we'll have some footage of that included in there as well. I still like that watch. I still think it's really cool. I think it works so well in gold. I think it would almost diminish it a little bit if they came out with a steel version, but that doesn't mean I wouldn't like to see it. And of course, having more accessible versions of these watches is never a bad thing. All right, so I also had a meeting with Cartier and got to see a lot of their watches. I'm generally hit or miss with Cartier watches personally, and they had some watches that kind of fall into both those categories this year. The Tortue Monopusher Chronograph, this is still maybe one of the more stunning watches of the show. I really like this watch. The Santos collection got quite a few updates in it, and some of the larger versions, even a dual time that I'm not particularly fond of their design, but I imagine would be quite popular. They also had a watch that goes backwards, so it's the Santos Dumont Rewind. 12 o'clock is still at the top, and then where you would expect 1 o'clock to be, it's actually 11 o'clock. So it kind of counts in reverse like that, and the hands actually run in reverse as well. It's got this lovely red dial, which I like. The rest of the watch, that feels, maybe slightly gimmicky to me personally. So I wasn't personally a huge fan of this watch as much as as other people were. For me, it was really kind of came down to the there's a new Panther XL that that I like quite a bit, and the Tortue collection, including that monograph, that Monopusher chronograph, which I was quite fond of. I know the Cartier is really kind of hip hot brand to like right now. You know, and I've always had, of course, an appreciation of them. I guess most of their watches aren't really in my wheelhouse for the kind or style of watches that I wear. My wife wears a two-tone Santos almost every day, and I think that's a pretty sharp watch, especially as it's kind of showing some age through the years. But generally, a lot of their watches fall outside of the realm of watches that I pay attention to, I suppose. Does that make me a bad person? I don't know, but I'm certainly not the most hip person in the world, obviously. All right, and I want to come back to Tudor and the Black Bay 58 GMT for just a moment. I feel like after hearing some of the reactions to that watch, well, a few things. You know, maybe we've been a little harsh or unfair on the watch. I don't think the colorway is that bad. You know, it's certainly not one that I would prefer, but yeah, I don't think it's ugly or hideous or doesn't work or anything like that. I think it, you know, it's perfectly handsome, and I wouldn't judge it just from some of the live pictures that you're seeing at the show. Like, it's not that dramatic. And I will note that a lot of the watches that we see and you see pictures of are less than ideal lighting situations or maybe some harsh light. So if you're going to look for some of the hands-on pictures from the show, make sure that it looks like it was, you know, well lit. I think James Stacey has some nice pictures of it that give a little more of a natural feel, that show you maybe the true nature of what this watch would look like, you know, walking around outside or anything like that. You know, I still think that I'm more excited about the movement that they made for it than I am about the actual watch, but perhaps we have been slightly harsh on the colorway, which I don't think is all that bad. And this brings us to what is likely my favorite watch from the show, and that is a new watch from Zenith. I think I've mentioned this before, maybe on the last couple of podcasts, and it's still kind of stayed there in really the front of my mind when I think about all the watches that I saw. And I saw a lot more watches that I really liked. The Parmigiani Toric collection is absolutely gorgeous. I really like the cut from Hermès. I thought it was really sharp, and I think if they made it in a few additional sizes, that that it's a watch that a lot of people would be interested in owning. And I like how they offer it on a wide array of straps and strap colors, so it works really well there. Speaking of, Vacheron added the new green dials to their overseas collection, and those watches come with three different strap options as well. I think that's a really cool thing to see, especially at a watch in that price range from a brand as prestigious as Vacheron. So, you know, I see these things moving in the right direction. There are a few other brands or watches that I would like to see maybe come with more strap options, but I feel like we're very much still getting there when it comes to that kind of thing. I think a lot of brands maybe know that they need to have a quick release type system, but the other step of that is kind of having a cohesive range of strap options to offer people so they can take advantage of the quick release systems on these watches. But anyways, my favorite watch is still that DeFi Extreme Diver. And the more I think about it, the more I think I like the black version of it as well. This is another watch that comes on it has three different strap options. The steel, there's a rubber synthetic strap, and then there's a pass-through strap that uses a steel link that kind of clicks into the quick release system there. And you know, the whole thing, I just really love the execution of this watch and how it's been done. This is a watch that has a huge personality, and I really love watches that aren't afraid to have big personalities, and maybe even step outside of their comfort zone a little bit. The DeFi, I think it's safe to say, has no real comfort zone. You know, they're everything that that you might see in the DeFi collection, and its whole impetus for being, I think, was kind of pushing outside of those boundaries, and that's certainly the case here. They also released the revival version of this watch, the 836-48, I believe, that brings the 1969 back design back to life, and this is certainly a riff on that, the Extreme Diver. And I think it just works in pretty much every level for me. This is the watch that I'm most excited about spending some more time with. And I'll be reviewing that watch in depth as soon as is humanly possible. So keep an eye out for that coming soon. All right. So for the back half of this episode, I wanted to include my discussion with Professor Brian Cox. We talk about that eternal calendar from IWC. We also nerd out a little bit on some space stuff and concepts of time and space. If you've watched any of Brian Cox on YouTube, you're probably aware of what I'm talking about. He's an excellent science communicator, maybe in the same vein as a Carl Sagan or something like that. So he's great at communicating a lot of these kind of heady concepts and clarifying maybe how scientists are deciphering a clearer picture of the universe around us. He's got a lot of interesting things to say. This is a guy that I feel like you could probably talk to for a few hours. So I'm going to cut over to that now. I'll leave some links to where you can find more Brian Cox down below if you are not familiar with him. I hope that I am cohesive in this interview. I'll tell you, I've interviewed some high profile people throughout my career, and it never really gets to me, but this one maybe did. I was a little nervous going into this talk. I like this guy a lot, and he's exceptionally smart. So with that in mind, I hope that you find the discussion enjoyable most of all. Once again, we'll have a lot more coming from the show in the coming weeks. If you're not subscribed to YouTube channel, go over and do that. I'll be adding more videos there throughout the next couple of weeks as well. All right, with that out of the way, here's my discussion with Professor Brian Cox. Brian, what brings you to Watches and Wonders here in Geneva this year?
Well, IWC bring me to Watches and Wonders because I've been asked and been sort of honoured to think about the eternal calendar and what it means. That this watch that calculates things, like it's capable, a mechanical device is capable of saying, well, in 2100, 2200 and 2300, we'll skip a leap year. Yeah. And then in 2400, we'll put one in, which is all to do with the fact that the Earth's orbit around the Sun doesn't quite match the length of the day. We've got to make little sort of adjustments to keep the seasons in sync with our time.
Is this a sidereal day?
Yes. Oh, well, so there's a sidereal year and the tropical year.
Sure.
There are different definitions of a year as well. But what it's telling you really is that What is this doing? It's connecting us with the sky. And that's why I'm interested in them and why I find them beautiful things. It's making us think about what our calendar is doing. Because I don't think we think about it very often. I think we just think, something happens. There are 12 months in a year. Why? Well, there are 12 months in a year, basically, because the moon goes around the Earth every 27, 28 days, whatever it is. It's depending on how you define it, by the way. There are different definitions of that. Yeah. But then also, these things, the moon phase is a very beautiful thing because, for years I didn't really think about moon phases. But then, of course, they're telling us, they're connecting us with the motion of the moon, actually the relative position of the moon and the sun as seen from the Earth. But the idea that this watch is accurate, the moon phase, to 45 million years, that to me is a deep thing. Because what it's saying is that we are thinking about long timescales. So we're trying to build machines that's accurate on that timescale. You are thinking in some kind of philosophical sense about that timescale. And that is certainly something we don't do very often.
Yeah. What was your impression of the watch when you first caught wind of it, when they told you about it? Are you a person that follows the watch industry or watches? Or was this kind of a surprise of, wow, this is incredible?
No, I thought it's incredible. If you look at it, right, these are not, that's not a big device. And the fact that it's really quite a complex computer in there and it's mechanical is a beautiful thing. So and then, of course, what you realize then is that you're seeing an interaction, the intersection of engineering and astronomy, philosophy, I suppose, in a way, in history in terms of our calendar, and art and craft.
Yeah.
Right? So you're seeing all those things. And there are very few things that we build, I think, now as a civilization, as human beings, that mix all those things together so profoundly.
So we're kind of at the dawn of entering into space as humans, as a species, and how we think about it. But of course, time is very relative to how we experience it here on this planet, and that changes maybe not the moment we leave its surface, but not that far out there. Well, you think that we'll be having to rethink how we calculate this kind of stuff on our wrists?
Yes, I mean, we have. So we've the second. So the length of a second, it's historic, essentially. And initially, it was defined as some nice fraction of a day, right? We decided, and the day is about the spin of the Earth around on its axis. That's not actually very constant. Yeah. So we realized that we should redefine it in terms of a year. And then we realized in the 1960s that wasn't accurate enough. So now we define it in terms of the way that atoms behave and the light emitted from atoms. That's atomic clocks. Yeah. And so there are different ways. When you start thinking about how you define time, seconds, meters, length. So length is now defined in terms of the speed of light and time. So you get into quite deep questions. And actually, then you start thinking about how would we communicate this to an alien civilization?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
How would we tell them what a second is? And yeah. How would we tell them what a meter is? And so we think about that, of course, and you can do. Because you could use fundamental properties of the universe.
So the distance that light travels within a given space. But they're still relative to us. So I know your specialty is black holes. But of course, we are sitting right above a black hole. The watch would look like it was running normally to us. But from an outside observer, we'd be basically frozen, right?
So, and the reason for that. So you're right that time passes at different rates for different people. For everyone. Yeah. So we all... move at different rates into the future, essentially, depending on how we move between the things that happen. We don't notice it because you have to travel very close to the speed of light, or as you said, go close to a black hole to see any difference between our watches. But it's true. What we're really seeing is that space and time are not separate from each other. So Einstein did discover some things that on which everyone would agree.
Yeah.
One of them, for example, is the distance between things that happen in space and time.
Sure.
In space-time.
That's so something the that Penrose always, diagram kind of
Penrose
depict
diagrams
this?
and the thing called the interval, the space-time interval.
The space-time interval. I love that. That sounds like it would make for a cool complication on a watch.
It's dx squared minus c squared dt squared. So it's like naturally. Pythagoras with a minus sign.
A Pythagoras with a minus sign. Okay.
Yeah, that's what it is. What space and time.
It's an easy way to remember.
Okay. So it's quite an easy thing, actually.
Yeah.
In flat space, and then it gets more complicated when you distort space, which is what Einstein's theory of gravity is all about.
So getting back to the calendar here, then you have one of the perpetual calendars on your wrist. Mm. Of course, the Gregorian calendar system has been around for quite some time, famously.
Since Gregory.
Yes. So if we could go back, and is there a more efficient system that we could put into place, theoretically?
Well, no, I mean, the Gregorian calendar is a spectacularly accurate system. So this idea of leap years and then leap centuries, but then every 400 years putting the leap year back in, that's accurate. So we have to modify that. It's going to drift in about 330,000 years, give or take. Hang on, no, that's wrong. 3,333 years.
Okay.
3,333 years, then we have an option to do something else with the leap year. But that's quite an achievement, actually.
Yeah.
So it on the average, it approximates the length of the year very well, the Gregorian calendar.
So it's pretty efficient already as it is, you know, if we were to start over on it from scratch today.
It's very good. It keeps everything in sync.
It'd be about.
And you're not going to have to make a big correction to that for 3,000 years.
Yeah. So I'd love to get more of your impressions on just IWC, the brand, and the watch itself. I see you've got the black dial and the gold case.
Oh, yeah.
Is this the aesthetic that appealed to you most in the new collection?
You know, it is. It is. However, the reason I hesitate is because every time you see a different one, you say that one.
They're beautiful.
But this is a tremendously beautiful thing. And I love the double moon phase. I love the northern and southern hemisphere.
Yeah.
Representation, because I'm always traveling down to Australia and things. So that's a very beautiful thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think because I associate them with astronomy, then there's something about the night. I mean, these are the new collection is dawn and daytime and dusk and then night.
It's
and
quite
this
poetic.
Is the night. Yeah,
it's
it is
romantic.
Beautiful. So those colors are gorgeous. But that's the problem. in buying one, is that when you look at them, you make your mind up, and then you put the other one on, and you go, oh, no, I want that one. So I don't know if anyone's ever going to walk out with four of these things.
I know. But, people, I'm sure there's a person
Someone will.
Are you traditionally a watch guy? Are you somebody that has been into watches? Do you wear a watch or anything like that?
Yes, and no, not at this level, actually, until quite recently.
Yeah.
And I got interested in the IWC watches, and almost also Bremont did one a while ago, which was celebrating Stephen Hawking.
Yeah.
Stephen Hawking's work, and so I was involved in that with the Hawking family.
Oh, nice.
And that got me really interested in really, you know, high precision and beautiful watches.
Yeah.
And then I found these things, and it's like, oh. Wow, it's another level of beauty.
Yeah, it's quite stunning. It looks great on the wrist here. And Brian, it's been a huge pleasure to talk to you. I can't thank you enough for your time. Keep up the great work that you're doing. My son and I love to watch your videos on YouTube.
Thank you very much. Nice to meet you.